Hello and welcome to the Outpost Frequencies podcast for thelastmovieoutpost.com for all your movie news, reviews, and everything cool about films.
Oh, it's alive! It's alive! It's alive!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass.
Why so serious?
You never know what you're going to get.
I drink your milkshake!
I'm back again, not George Lucas, talking about the films that I've seen. Been a slow week. I've had one of those weeks where I've actually had to do some work, so I haven't had a chance to watch as many films as I would like. But here we go. So, going to start with, and this is my own fault for watching this, Halloween 2007, the one directed by Rob Zombie. Now, I am not a fan of Rob Zombie. I think his MO is to put as much swearing and violence into a film, and the more swearing and violence, the better the movie. The film itself wasn't bad. There was kind of a wasted first act, I thought, of Michael growing up and how he became the way he became, because this was then it went into, I want to say, the second one, because this was like a spin-off of the first one, but with Malcolm McDowell playing Donald Pleasance's character. It didn't work for me. There was too much swearing and violence. I don't mind swearing and violence, as I've said in the past, but when it's over the top, wasn't a fan. So yeah, Halloween 2007 by Rob Zombie, a hard pass. I'm not going to bring myself to watch the second one, because this was just, it was terrible. The Haunting, 1963. Now, if you've been on thelastmovieoutpost.com and you have been reading our 31 Days of Horror, you may have seen my retro review of this. The Haunting is one of my most favourite movies ever made. It's a brilliant horror movie, but it's just a fantastically well-made movie. Directed by Robert Wise, it stars Judy Harris, Claire Boone, Richard Johnson and Russ Tamblyn. And those are the four main players. Hill House has stood for 90 years and appears to be haunted. Its inhabitants have always met with strange and tragic ends. Now, Dr. Markway has assembled a team of people who he thinks can prove whether or not the house is haunted. If you haven't seen this original version, it's black and white, but if you haven't seen this one, I highly recommend it. Not just as a horror film, but as just a well-made movie. There is no monster in the house. The house itself is the monster. But everything is played through sound effects, the actors, camera angles. And it is such a spooky movie. It's one of those films that will give me goosebumps. I know the film very, very well. I've seen it hundreds of times before. It is a really great horror. You need to switch off all the lights, put on a decent sound system or your headphones, and just let this thing wash over you. And it is so well done. There's a scene where Judy Harris and Claire Bloom are in a bedroom and something is banging on the wall in the corridor outside. It is so chilling. It's absolutely wonderful. Really do recommend The Haunting if you haven't seen it. The remake in 1999, I think, with Liam Neeson and Catherine Zeta-Jones, was terrible. Terrible. This original is an absolute classic. Like I say, it is black and white, which I know some put some people off, but I can't recommend The Haunting enough. It is one of those films that is, I won't say it's not perfect, but it is absolutely fantastic, and I love it. So yes, highly recommended, The Haunting, 1963. Something that's streaming at the moment is Old Henry, 2021. Starring Tim Blake Nielsen, who, nerd fact, shares the same birthday as me. So, you know, if I ever meet him, I can say, hey, bud, we're birthday buddies. This was a Western, an action Western about a farmer who takes an injured man with a satchel of cash. When a posse comes for the money, he must decide who to trust. Defending a siege, he reveals that the gunslinging talents called his true identity into question. This was really good. I'm not a massive fan of Westerns. I've said that before, I think. I can take them or leave them. But this was great. Tim Blake Nielsen was fantastic in this as an old, grizzled he wants to be a farmer, but he's obviously had a life before that, which is explained in the movie, and I'm not going to say anything. The only problem I had with it was the bad guy was Stephen Dorff, who's a bit of an obvious choice for the bad guy. And there was a shootout at the end, which I didn't quite make sense of, because he kind of ran off into the woods, and I thought he would have been better in the house. Not that I'm spoiling anything here. But overall, the film was really, really well told. Really, really good. Old Henry, streaming at the moment, 2021. Like I say, you may not be a fan of Westerns, but I highly recommend it. Don't Breathe 2. 2021. The sequel is set for the years following the initial delay M. Dudley Home invasion of Norman Nordstrom. Stephen Lang lives in quiet solace until his past catches up with him. I was not a fan of Don't Breathe. I know loads of people absolutely rate it and say it's like one of the greatest horrors and everything else and so forth. I was into it. Until it got to the point with the kidnapped girl in the basement who'd been impregnated by a turkey baster. To me, that was utterly stupid. My brain completely checked out, and I cannot tell you how Don't Breathe finished. It was utterly ludicrous writing. This second one is by the same people, and it has the same type of thing. Sorry. I can't tell you a thing about this film. It was bloody stupid is what I was going to say. I don't understand how they've tried to make Stephen Lang the good guy, the same guy who kidnapped a girl and basically raped her. He's the good guy in Don't Breathe 2. I honestly only saw this last week, and I can't tell you a thing about it. Actually saying that now, I remember now. The story gets as stupid as the first one. I just only remember what happened near the end now. It was ridiculous. Don't Breathe 2. Don't Bother 2 for 2021 for that. Going back to the classics, The Uninvited, 1944. Now, this popped up on our 31 Days of Horror on the last movie at post.com. Where Sean wrote an article about haunted house movies. And The Uninvited, I think I'd seen, but I couldn't quite remember. So I found a copy and put it on. Overall, fantastic movie. I do like the old black and white classics. A composer and his sister discover that the reason they are able to purchase a beautiful Gothic seacoast mansion very cheaply is that the house is because of the house's unsavory past. It was very good. Was very well done. I thought the story was a little bit overcomplicated come towards the end, and I kind of lost some of the details of who was who and what was what and so forth. The main issue I had with this film was the music. Now, I can't remember who did the music, but he obviously thought his role as the music guy was to ramp up the music as much as possible. And there was lots of places where the music was completely and utterly overblown. And the music was either light, fluffy, here's a joke, or dark, menacing and mooning and over the top. And it kind of took it out of me. It took the edge off the scares in it. There are very good special effects in the movie, especially for 1940. But this wasn't the best film that I've seen in a while. It was okay. You know, if you do like the classics and the black and white and everything else, I did like the fact it was originally shot. Well, they said the coast of Devon and Cornwall. Right? He was born in Devon. So, you know, that was nice. But the film was, it was trying too hard to be a comedy, but also trying too hard to be a horror. And unless you get that balance right, it doesn't really work. And like I say, The Uninvited, 1944. Not a massive fan. At random, one evening, Sabrina, 1995. An ugly duckling, having undergone a remarkable change, still harbours feeling for her crush, a carefree playboy, but not before his business-focused brother has something to say about it. This is directed by Sidney Pollack, stars Harrison Ford, Julia Ormond and Greg Kinnear are the main players. I have seen this before. Don't know why I sat down and watched it again. I'm not really into rom-coms. Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a... I mean, it was mildly funny in places, but I wouldn't say it was a romantic comedy. What I couldn't get in this was, firstly, Julie Armand is not an ugly duckling. She is incredibly beautiful. But obviously, if you put glasses on a beautiful girl, that makes them ugly. That's how it works in movies, obviously. She's All That is exactly the same. Rachel Lee Cook is stunningly good looking. Put her in a pair of glasses, ugly. None of that made any sense. But also, Harrison Ford was a complete and utter arse in it. Basically, he wants to break up Julie Armand and Greg Kinnear. And so he cons this woman into it. And he was quite an arse. I don't think he deserved Julie Armand at the end. I've blown the end in there. But it's kind of one of those romantic comedies where you know it's Harrison Ford and Julie Armand are supposed to end up together. I wasn't a fan of this. Like I say, Harrison Ford was an arsehole. He didn't deserve her. And yeah, that's like I say, not a fan. The next movie I was a fan of. I've been waiting many years to see this. Should have been watching it in the cinema last December, but I finally got to see the remake of June, the 2021 version by Denis Villeneuve with Timothy Chalamet and Rebecca Ferguson and Zendaya and Oscar Isaacs and every other actor in the entire world at the moment. I haven't been to the cinema since Tenant, so it's been quite a while. So to get back to the cinema, I was excited. Had my tickets, went with a friend. We sat down to enjoy this film. Blown away by this. It was incredible. I've got a review on the website, Last Movie Outpost. Have a look at that and have a read of it. The film, to me, is not perfect, but it is incredibly, incredibly well made. I spoke about last week that I'd seen the Lord of the Rings films. And funny enough, I'd finished Return of the King now. And Lord of the Rings is an incredible sequence of films. It's a beautifully told story. There are moments where the CG just takes you out of the film every now and then. It's amazing to watch, but it's just every now and then it just takes you out. In June, there was no visuals anywhere throughout the film that took you out of it. Everything you see on screen is believable. There is an Arrakis. There is the home of, I'm trying to think of their names now, these families. Everything about it is real. The dragonfly helicopter chopper things. I haven't read the books. I never read the books. Can't remember what they were called. But the entire movie was a visual treat beyond anything I can remember I've seen in the last 20 years odd. Maybe Gladiator. I mean, I'm going back to the days of the early things like Ben-Hur and the Ten Commandments and those kind of epic movies. This is what this was. It was epic, but it wasn't in-your-face epic. I'm even going to say, even comparing it to things like, and we did this on the, if you do listen to the podcast or you watch the live streams on Sunday, I mentioned both The Rise of Skywalker and Endgame. And both of them do have amazing visuals, but Endgame never felt real at the end fight with that, you know, the whole thing where everybody turns up because they've all come back from the click and blah, blah, blah. It looks incredible, but it's not perfect. And the same with The Rise of Skywalker. The problem with The Rise of Skywalker, it looks beautiful, but none of it makes any sense. The whole bit where the ships turn up at the end to save Poe when he's just given up. How do they all get through that wormhole thing? None of that made any sense. The bit where the Emperor uses Force Lightning and manages to hit all the bad guys. It reminded me of the scene in Top Secret, I think, when Chocolate Mousse shot all the Germans whilst all his friends were there. I don't know if you've seen that, but there's a stupid scene where he manages to hit all the bad guys, but not the good guys. And I kept thinking, how has the Emperor done that? How does he know where his lightning's going that it's going to hit all the good guys? Those movies are fantastic, but they took... Well, Rise of Skywalker was not, obviously, but they took you out of the film. In June, I've actually seen it twice now because I saw it at home as well on streaming. It never takes you out of the film at any point. It's amazing. The score is... I'm still weird about this. Mongolian throat singing. I can't say I'm a massive fan of. You know, I haven't got the greatest hits of Mongolian throat singing you know, on a CD or anything anywhere, but it does fit the tone perfectly, and all of the music fits it so well. Visually and aurally, is that the word, where it's for your ears? This film is perfection. The only issues I had with it was, for me, the Baron was very good. I like Bill Strasgard. No, it's not. I can't remember how to say his name now. Stalingrad. He's great. But his Baron was not the same as the Baron in the original movie. In the original movie, Kenneth MacKillan, I think it was, played him, and he was all covered in warts, and there was a doctor working on his warts and taking this pus out of them, and he pulls that heart plug out of that lad, and he covers himself with this black liquid. And in that first movie, the Baron was disgusting. You could smell him. He was awful. In this new one, the Baron is evil, and he's got his own ways and everything else, but he's just not... he's not as bad as the original one, I felt. And I was also, and I've said this a couple of times, I was really angry at how the movie finished. I'm not going to spoil too much in case you haven't seen it, but to me, that the movie could have gone on for another hour and a half, another couple of hours, and I would have been quite happy to sit there and watch the entire thing. And it finished, and I was very, no, I don't want to see who it's directed by. I want to see more of it. It was, that was really annoying about the whole thing. Dune is an absolute, I don't want to say masterpiece, because it's not quite perfect, but it is just one of the most spectacular things I've seen in a long, long time. It is incredible. If you haven't seen it and you're a fan of science fiction, you may have seen the original. That doesn't matter. This Dune is one of the best films I've seen in a long, long time. Dune 2021. I've got Lord of the Rings in here because I finally finished it. That was The Return of the King. Again, it's just a cracking set of movies. And do you know what? I'm going to be honest here. In Return of the King, when Erwan is crowned and then he sings his song and then he walks down and the four lads go to kneel to him and he says to them, "You kneel to no one." Just gets you right there, doesn't it? Oh, I cried. I'm not going to lie. I cried. I've seen this film 1,000 times and I've cried. It is fantastic. The storytelling is absolutely wonderful. Like I say, there are moments where the CG just takes you out of there a little bit. Some of the acting I feel is a little bit pantomime, which if you're not familiar with is kind of it's a British thing where it's just a little bit of too over the top. But overall, the movie is incredible. The other bit that gets me as well is when they're outside the Black Gate and Aragorn turns around. Aragorn gets made king, stupid boy. And Aragorn turns around and just says, "For Frodo." Oh, man, it's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. The Lord of the Rings trilogy, you can't fault it. Night of the Living Dead. Now, this was the remake in 1990 by Tom Savini. I watched a documentary recently about the life of Tom Savini, and he talked about this. The downside is he does talk about, unfortunately, how the production was hindered because he was going through a divorce at the time, and he couldn't put as much focus into the movie as he had wanted, and it also didn't have the ending that he wanted. But it's a solid remake. It's not bad, and his direction is pretty good. I can't say there's anything massively outstanding about it, but he is one of those people that he makes a good film. Obviously, the special effects are fantastic in it. Very, very good. I don't know, if I was going to watch Night of the Living Dead, I would watch the original again as opposed to this one. He did do a very good job, but it's just, like I say, it's just not perfect. Tony Todd, again, is in it and a little bit over the top with it. And a little bit over dramatic in quite a few places. Again, it's a shame, but overall, it's one of those films, like I say, you're going to enjoy it. If you like that horror from the 80s and 90s, you're going to enjoy this, especially if you're not a fan of the black and white one of the original. If you're not a fan of black and white movies, you're an idiot, because some black and white movies are fantastic. Eraserhead is black and white. Psycho is black and white. You know, I mean, just off the top of my head. just because something's black and white doesn't mean it's a rubbish film. I have met people in the past who sort of saying, I'm not going to watch that. I'm not going to watch that with subtitles. I'm not going to watch that because it's black and white. You're missing out. Out of the two, though, Night of the Living Dead, I would still prefer the original. The remake, though, is a solid effort. Because it's Halloween and I can't remember the last time I saw this, I put on Conjuring 2, which is the one where Ed and Lorraine go to London. Down to Cockney London, down there, all right, geezer? Yeah, there's an haunted house down here and his ghost is like chucking us around and all down the apples and pears and that, ain't they? I'm allowed to do that because I'm English. I don't appreciate when Americans try those accents. The second one was all right. Felt it was quite disjointed. The whole nun thing that they threw in the middle of it kind of just, I don't know, didn't make any sense to me, apart from then doing a spin-off. And I remember watching the Nun movie spin-off and laughed most of the way through it because it was awful. This second one was okay. I do remember reading the story when it came out in London or seeing reports about it over on British TV and that kind of thing. So I do actually remember it. But yeah, I don't know. Overall, it wasn't a great movie. It was the first one I thought was excellent. The last one I seem to remember liking, but I can't tell you much about it. It's not a good sign, is it? But this second one, it was an all right remake. Like I say, it was quite disjointed. It was James Wan again, and Vera Farmiga. I'm so sorry about my reading. And Patrick Wilson were in it, so it was the same returning cast for all three of them. And it was kind of a shame that she kept saying, I saw a vision of you getting killed. And I kept thinking, it's okay, you're in the third movie. So that was a bit of a shame. So, yeah, it was Conjuring 2, 2016. It's all right, but it's nothing outstanding. I have just finished watching, and this is because it came up on a 1990s film list, Trainspotting, 1996. One of those films, you either love it or you hate it. I remember the last time I tried to watch this, I was at a friend's house and his girlfriend was highly offended by all the sex and swearing and drug use and turned it off halfway through, to which I moaned at my mate and it all ended in a big Barney. It is one of those films where not one to sit down with the kids and watch. Hey kids, let's watch a film about train spotting. Because obviously there's very little trains in it. I think a train drops them off in the middle of Scotland somewhere, and that's pretty much it. The film itself is brilliant. For me, I love Ewan Bremner, who plays Spud. And not Renton, don't get me wrong, Ewan McGregor. I mean, the entire cast is brilliant, but Ewan Bremner is brilliant in this. Why have you come for this interview? In the word, pleasure. My pleasure and other people's pleasure. And that's a terrible Glaswegian accent. And I love how in the film, quite a lot of it, I'm English and I've been to Glasgow. I love Glasgow. I worked there quite a lot over the last few years. But there are some people, when they are talking with their proper Glaswegian accents, I can't understand them. The friend of mine who I was working with, she was talking to a friend of hers and I could pick out my name now and then. But it was very much, oh yeah, Neon's back in the heat. But overall, it's still a fantastic movie. I've never done drugs, never been into it, never sort of even been bothered with them. But watching a movie like that kind of makes me think I've made the right decision. But it's done not in a patronising way of, oh, drugs are bad and going to kill you and mess up your life. It's done in a very realistic way, I think. It's a really fantastic movie. If you haven't seen it, I must watch the second one again at some point in time as well, because I haven't seen that for a long time. That, annoyingly, is all I've watched this week. It's literally only about half a dozen movies in a week. That's terrible for me. Next week will be more, but what I am going to do is the interview I did recently with Courtney Palm, which again is on the website and on our YouTube channel for The Last Movie Outpost, if you have a look for them. The main interview that I did with her was great, and we talked about Beyond Paranormal and the other movies that she's done. But when we'd finished the interview, we just chatted for 10-15 minutes. So that is what I'm going to put on for you now to have a listen to. Just myself and Courtney Palm having a chat after the interview and see what an incredible lady she is. So here is just the extras from the Courtney Palm interview.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. Thanks very much. Courtney, that was absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much. Honestly, I really can't thank you enough for that. It's actually the very... I've only been working for the LMO for... a few months, and I do mostly the video work and stuff, but this is the first interview I've ever done.
Oh, you did a very good job. Your interview, your questions were just lined up perfectly. I love the 20 question fast pass kind of thing. And you have a great voice for this as well. Like, it's just really, it's nice to listen to. So I think people would come back just to hear what you have to say along with whatever guests you have.
Well, thank you. I've done a lot of public speaking. My dad used to do a lot of public speaking. And so I just not fell into it, but I got into the habit of doing it. And so I think it is just the accent is what it is. I have said before, it's actually a fake accent just to score with chicks. But having a British accent doesn't work.
Yeah, no, you know, that does help. But what I mean is, I feel really scatterbrained and I say or whatever. And you're very to the point and concise. And it's just you're well spoken, accent or not.
Thank you. It's because I can speak the Queen's English.
Yes, you're very posh.
Well, it's funny because I don't live in a posh area. My mum is from Devon. Down in Devonshire, they talk like this, which don't sound posh at all, does it? No. And whenever I talk to my mum, I always kind of laugh because she rolls her R's and so forth. But I don't know where this accent came from. It's not from anywhere specifically, but it's just English.
Okay.
Is what it is. Courtney, like I say, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. I'm sorry to have taken so much time. I didn't think it was going to take this long. I was kind of...
Oh, no, it's okay. I'm not doing anything today. I have nothing lined up for the week, so I'm actually able to finally chill.
That is...
I had like 3 weeks of working that were just nonstop, and I'm finally getting to chill again.
Righto. Well, you go and have a rest of a good Saturday. And once I'm going to edit this together because I've, like I say, my main skill is in editing and so forth. So I'm going to edit all this together and then I'll get it up on Twitter and let your fans enjoy it.
Okay. Well, thank you for reaching out to me. I'm glad that sometimes I don't look at my Twitter comments, you know, so I'm glad that I saw it and you emailed me. So thank you. And thanks for dealing with that whole thing last week. I really do feel bad about it.
Honestly, it was I kind of in my head because it was kind of like the first big interview I've ever done. I did think to myself, it's bound not to come off or anything else. And I gave you a good sort of 20-25 minutes, and then I thought, oh, she's not coming. And then I thought, I'll just pop a quick email, just politely, as opposed to, oh, you forgot,
having a ride. Your email was so polite. Well, see, and I don't have notifications on my phone either. I have it all on silent because I don't know how to work the iPhone yet. I need to just take a day and learn how to work it. So I have everything on silent. So I miss a lot of things.
Okay.
It's... My agent, yeah, she'll call and she's like, did you get my email? I was like, no.
You sent an email?
I didn't, like, because I just need to figure out my phone and figure out notifications and figure everything out, and I'll be a better functioning human.
It's really not an issue, like I say. I really appreciate it. What I will say is when you've won your first Oscar and everything else, just make sure you remember the little people like us.
Thank you. I'm hoping... First of all, I just want to say two things. You were like, oh, she's not going to come, whatever, and, you know, whatever. I think we co-create our realities. I think something happened where it just wasn't meant to happen that day. Maybe our energies weren't aligned. But I am going to co-create this reality of mine, and I'm going to say I am going to win an Oscar for this new movie that I'm going to be writing. It's a true story, and it's going to be based on the documentary Sea of Shadows. So I recommend watching Sea of Shadows just because it opens your eyes as to what's going on in the Sea of Cortez with an endangered Totowaba fish and now a very endangered Vaquita porpoise. And I want to take that documentary and make it into a drama movie, kind of a Romeo and Juliet meets the Sea of Shadows movie, and hopefully get Joaquin Phoenix in there. And so I would be in there, the Sea Shepherd would be in there. So it'd be like a really epic film. I'm hoping that I can pull this off within the next 5 years. And that's the one I'm like, this is the one I'm going to win an Oscar for, no doubt. And maybe not as an actor, but like as a just the film itself will win something.
So you're actually interested in doing writing and that kind of thing then? Is it like writing and maybe directing and producing something an avenue you'd like to go down, or?
Yeah, I would love to, because every time I'm on these low budget movies, I end up changing a lot of things. I feel like I end up producing self-find locations, or I just start taking over because people don't know what they're doing. Like really, really low budget movies.
Yeah.
And everyone always says like, oh, you should be a director. You should do this. I'm like, I don't know. I just never really put the time into it. I've directed plays before, so I feel like it is an avenue I can do. But this particularly, I had a vision of it and I felt like that was a call from the universe to do it. So that's why I'm stepping into this. I don't consider myself a writer, but I have a good writing partner.
Excellent. No, again, it kind of all starts from somewhere. A friend of mine is just written for the BBC. He's written, I can't remember what it's called now. Blood Wolf, I think it's called. It's a teenage werewolf thing on BBC over here.
Oh, okay.
And he's just written for them. And he's kind of still questioning his own validation. And I said, dude, I said, you've started on that road. When I often look through the IMDb and you see the list of credits that people have done, and they've started on, I mean, we've got shows over here like EastEnders or Coronation Street, which are like the regular soaps, which people, but then they've gone on to win Oscars and star in major motion pictures. And I always think we all start somewhere. You know, this first interview with Courtney Palm, happy days, you know, and then, you know, in a year's time when I'm interviewing somebody just after the Oscars or anything else, I think, oh, it just all started with that, you know, that wee interview with Courtney.
Yeah. Yay. Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking that too earlier today, like literally today I was thinking, oh, everybody has to start somewhere. Yeah. Like even Amazon was like nothing when it first started, and look at it now. So, you know, that's just how you have to view life. If you would just take the first step and the next step and the next step, you know, and as long as you're doing what makes you feel good for your highest good and the highest good of everyone else, you're on the right path regardless of what you're doing, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, completely agree. Like I say that, I mean, I've done several jobs in the past with different things. I was a photographer a few years ago, but I was trolled out of it and I didn't know what to do. But then I stumbled upon The Last Movie Outpost, and it's only a hobby for me, but just being able to watch movies and write reviews and that kind of thing and look for movie news every day, I absolutely love it. And I keep thinking, like I say, I just don't know where it's going to take me in the future. And at the moment I'm happy, but like I say, if I get to do an interview with somebody like yourself, that makes it even better, you know, and it's great.
Yeah, that's fun. I agree. You get to meet new people, you get to hear different stories and view life from a different perspective, and it really opens your worldview. And yeah, I appreciate your time. And I think, again, just everyone starts somewhere, like you said. So that's really good advice.
Excellent. Courtney, again, thank you so much. Like I say, you go and have yourself a good Saturday. And as soon as I've got it all edited and up, I'll send you a link and let you know.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much. You're amazing.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Ciao. Bye.
Wasn't she nice? She was. She was absolutely lovely. I'm so appreciative that she took the time out to have a chat with me and us at The Last Movie Outpost. It was great. Well, that's me for this week. I'm sorry it's so short. I feel bad for not watching no more movies, but you can blame stupid people who are giving me work. Okay, that's completely their fault. I've actually got the week off, so I'm doing bits and pieces of it, but I am watching more movies. So next week, there will be more. I promise. Well, I can't promise, because, you know, I may not. But I will do my best to watch me. We're going to be talking about, on Sunday, on the live stream on YouTube, we are going to be talking about the 31 Days of Horror, because it is Halloween, and we're going to be talking about all the Halloween movies and horror movies that we've done. So join us on Sunday on the live stream. Make sure you bookmark thelastmovieoutpost.com, because we do movie news every day. We do reviews when we can, and it's generally interesting stuff that you can read there. And it's also interesting to see what you guys think, so you can comment on the each of the articles below. Apart from that, thank you very much for joining me. You can find me on Twitter at notgeorgelucas1. You can email me, notgeorgelucas1@gmail.com, with anything that you might want me to talk about or any anything else that you might just want to think, just, you know, even if you want to email me and saying shut up, it'd be appreciated because I don't get many emails. Apart from that, I will see you at thelastmovieoutpost.com. Until next week, make sure you enjoy some good movies.
I do wish we could chat longer.
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
I will have my vengeance.